Penguin Random House Audio presents All In, an autobiography by Billie Jean King with Jonette Howard and Marianne Vollers. This is the author, Billie Jean King. Note to all you listeners, this program includes a downloadable PDF of appendices from the book. To Ilana, my love, my partner, to the moon and back. To my parents, for the love, laughter, and the values that they instilled in me that continue to shape my life every day. To my brother, RJ, whom I love, for a lifetime of support and unconditionally loving me back. To everyone who continues to fight for equity, inclusion, and freedom. Fight for the things that you care about, but do it in a way that will lead others to join you. Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Preface. When I was a girl, I'd sit in my elementary school classroom in Long Beach, California, staring at the big pull-down map of the world and daydream about the places I'd go. England, Europe, Asia, South America, Africa. Even then, I felt the borders had no hold on me. They connected me. I can't remember a time when I didn't have a restlessness, an ambition, and an urgency. As much as I love my family and hometown, I always knew that my life would somehow take me beyond their embrace. I was born in the wartime 1940s, reared in the button-down 1950s, and came of age during the Cold War and rebellions of the 1960s. My father was a firefighter, and my mother was a homemaker, who sometimes sold Tupperware and Avon products to help us get by. They were both determined to give my younger brother Randy and me a loving existence that was more stable than their broken families had been. But unrest was all around us. My early life played out against the backdrop of the civil rights movement, the women's movement, the Cold War, assassinations, and anti-war protest of the 1960s. The LGBTQ plus rights movement would come later. When I began playing youth tennis in the 1950s, college sports scholarships didn't exist for girls. The only women's pro sport was the Ladies Professional Golf Association, which was founded in 1950 by 13 players, but was still working to build purses and gain traction. The modern women's sports movement, as we know it, essentially started the day 9 of his players and a sharp businesswoman named Gladys Hellman, the publisher of World Tennis Magazine, broke away in 1970 to create the first women's pro tennis circuit, ignoring the sneers from a male-run tennis establishment that told us no one would pay to see us play, and then repeatedly threatened us with suspensions when it looked as if folks might. I didn't start out with grievances against the world, but the world certainly seemed to have grievances against girls and women like me. There was the principal who wouldn't sign a permission slip to excuse me for a week-long tennis tournament until my mom went to the school office and said, "My daughter's a straight-A student. What could possibly be the problem?" The elementary school teacher who sent a note to my parents explaining that she was marking me down a grade because Billie Jean occasionally takes advantage of her superior ability during recess playground games. The local tennis official at my first tennis tournament, Perry T. Jones, who turned heads by yanking me out of a group photo when I was 11 years old because I was wearing white shorts, not a white skirt or white tennis dress. Pursuing your goals as a girl or woman then often meant being pricked and dogged by slights like that. It made no sense to me. Why would anyone set arbitrary limits on another human being? Why were we being treated as unreasonable for asking reasonable questions? Why were we constantly told, you can't do this, don't do that, temper your ambition, lower your voice, stay in your place, act less competent than you are, do as you're told? Why weren't a female striving in individual differences seen as life-enriching, a source of pride, rather than a problem? If I felt that way, I wondered how the people of color around me felt. When I was young, I'd seen photos of how the Little Rock Nine students had to walk past an angry white mob to desegregate their Arkansas school in 1957, and how 6-year-old Ruby Nell Bridges still had to be escorted daily by 4 federal marshals to attend classes at her previously all-white New Orleans school 3 years later. I knew the stories of how Althea Gibson and Jackie Robinson broke the color barriers in their respective sports, tennis and baseball. The all-white country clubs that hosted tennis tournaments I began playing in were noticeably different from Long Beach's Polytechnic High, the racially mixed school I attended. Poly was integrated in 1934, 9 years before I was born. But my high school didn't offer varsity sports for girls. Free tennis instruction in the public parks was my only option. As time passed, the incidents kept piling up. There was the sight of the top-ranked teenage boys getting free meals at the lunch counter at the Los Angeles Tennis Club, while my mother and I sat outside on benches behind the courts, eating the brown bag lunches we brought. We weren't comped, even though I was a top junior player too. There was the future advisor who introduced himself to me after I won a match at age 15 and said, "You're going to be number one someday, Billie Jean." A thrilling first, only to have him tell me later, as casually, as if he were appraising my backhand, "You'll be good because you're ugly." After I married Larry King and rose to number one in the world, I still faced constant questions about whether playing tennis was worth it, and when was I going to retire and have children. Do you ask Rod Laver the same questions I'd respond, referring to one of the great male players of my era? Even if you're not born an activist, life can damn sure make you one. The older I got, the more I aspired to. There wasn't just unrest in the world around us. There was a storm gathering inside me. To this day, my 1973 Battle of the Sexes match against Bobby Riggs remains cast in the public imagination as the defining moment for me when everything coalesced and some fuse was lit. But in truth, that drive had been smoldering in me since I was a child. What the Riggs match in its fevered buildup proved was that millions of others felt locked in the same tug of war over gender roles and equal opportunities. I wanted to show that women deserve equality and we can perform under pressure and entertain as well as the men. I think the outcome and the discussions the match provoked advanced our fight. A crowd of 30,472, then a record for tennis, came to the Houston Astrodome for the match that September night. An estimated 90 million more watched the event worldwide on TV, a record for a sporting event. Along the way, it always amazed me when people saw me as a separatist. I'm an egalitarian, and I always have been. I've always pushed for everything to be equal. Everyone pulling together, though I know how hard that is to achieve. What's become clear to me is that people and leaders of every generation have to argue and re-argue the details and meanings of eras for themselves. Coretta Scott King put it perfectly when she wrote, "Struggle is a never-ending process. Freedom is never really won. You earn it and win it in every generation." Today, the work of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference and the NAACP is carried on by groups such as Black Lives Matter. The feminist arguments advanced by NOW helped inform the Me Too movement and Time's Up. The 1969 Stonewall Uprising led to ACT UP, which eventually led to LGBTQ+.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?